shares, the market, the S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that enjoys the sound of silence and prefers a Powerwall over Wonderwall. I'm Andrew Page, and with me is Scott Phillips.
This ain't no Oasis, Andrew.
Sure ain't. Three topics for you this week. Firstly, the Trump dump.
Copyright Andrew Page.
Is it? I'm hoping that catches on. I'm going to keep saying it till it does. Is it time for Hail to the Chief, Donald style? Next, here comes the energy revolution. A lot happening in the energy space. We're going to dig into that. And finally, trading wisdom for foolishness. What party is best for investors and the markets? Should it be to the left or the right? We'll scratch that itch in just a moment. But first, the Trump dump. There it is again. That's number two. We'll see how many we can fit in this podcast. Now, a week ago, the Donald, as he is called, the billionaire US tycoon who could well be the next leader of the free world, had a 20% chance of winning the presidential election. 2 weeks ago, it was a 14% chance. Today, on the, you know, not far to go, we are looking at a 34% chance. So really a 1 in 3 chance that he becomes the next president. Now, that's all good and well, and we're going to remain politically agnostic here, but there's plenty of prognostications out there as to what this is going to mean.
Agnostic prognostications.
You like it?
Yeah, kind of.
It's you know, is this going to be good or bad for the economy? Now, most of the pundits out there are saying this is going to be bad. If Trump gets in, markets are going to crash. Scott, are they right?
Well, let's take a little step back first. Let's talk about why the markets might crash. Let's talk about the economy.
Okay.
Donald Trump, he's, again, love him or loathe him, you can guess which side of the story I'm on there. This is kind of unparalleled policy, right? This is taking America back to basically the 1920s, the isolationism of America. Remember, they only got dragged into the Second World War basically because of the Pearl Harbor bombing. Pre that, they sat on the sidelines. They were effectively a neutral non-combatant. They didn't want to take part. Mm-hmm. America of the 20s and 30s was a country that wanted to be left to its own devices and stay out of everyone else's way. This is basically what Trump wants to take them back to 90-odd years later. He wants to close borders physically to people. He wants to build the wall across with between America and Mexico, as he says. He also wants to stop a whole lot of trade. He wants to tear up trade treaties. He wants to change the way things are done. He basically, you know, the whole idea of the win-win trade treaty is going by the wayside under a Trump presidency. Mm. And it's going to be all about we win, you lose. That's the uncertainty for the world economy now. No one really knows, A, what Trump's going to do, and B, how it's going to affect the rest of the world. This is probably the largest policy shakeup in American history, certainly in modern American history, well and truly back in the 1800s and before. So the first thing that people are really nervous about is we simply don't know what could happen. Mm. What's really important to point out, and look, we've talked about international trade here before. What's really important to point out is whether you like it or hate it, and people have a different view, international trade is actually really, really good for the economy. It's good for us, it's good for the Americans, it's good for the Japanese, the Russians, the English. Name your country. International trade allows us to sell the stuff we make cheaply and buy the stuff someone else makes cheaply, and we're both better off as a result.
Even though, of course, there are little dislocations here and there for individuals, you absolutely got to acknowledge.
Totally. Yep. So, you know, when our car industry closes down here, there are people put out of work, there are components makers put out of work.
Right.
That's a big deal, and we need to recognize that. Yep. But overall, the fact that we can buy better and cheaper cars from Germany or from Asia or from the US, and we can sell someone else the wheat that we produce or the education that we produce at a much better, cheaper, higher quality basis than someone in another country, means we get cheaper cars, they get better education, we're both better off because we've got money for that education and we use it to buy those cheaper cars. Mm. Our standard of living is materially higher now than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. There's a lot of reasons for that, but chief among them, probably at least the top three, is the benefits of international trade. Mm. So when Trump says, no more international trade or only on my terms, the possibility that could actually significantly hurt the US standard of living and frankly the rest of the world standard of living is relatively high. On a simple basis, he says, look, there's going to be more jobs in America. I'm going to not buy cheap stuff from overseas. I'm going to have more jobs in America. Everyone goes, yeah, that's great. Now, the American unemployment rate is already 4 point something, I want to say. Mm-hmm. There's not that many more jobs really that can be taken
pretty
up by the US economy, right?
Mm.
So you think about, okay, that's the first thing. If they, let's say they got rid of all imports from China, Japan, the cheaper manufacturing countries, higher quality manufacturing countries, brought them all back to the States. They would be buying more expensive cars, more expensive televisions, more expensive food, more expensive iPhones, the whole box and dice. Everything would be much more expensive. Mm-hmm. So yes, there'd be a few more jobs in the States, maybe, probably not quite.
But
frankly,
on average, everyone's standard of living goes down.
And you also lose the export jobs. So think about the cars they're making in America that we're buying over here, the Ford Mustang, for example, right? Mm-hmm. If we stop doing that, we start buying our own cars again, The Americans are out of jobs in the car manufacturing industry, even if they make some more jobs making iPhones. So there is no net benefit. There's a significant net cost to that. Now, that's a quick segue, but thinking about back to a Trump presidency, the real risk here is the isolationist policies of a Donald Trump, and frankly, the other stuff we don't know about, has the potential to really significantly harm the American economy and the world economy, and that's what's got people worried.
Well, and okay, so that all makes sense. And again, let's go back to the odds. I didn't say it was right. I said it made sense.
First time for everything.
And so when you're looking down the barrel of something like that, and the odds of this happening, you know, one on three, it's like rolling a dice and getting a one or two, right? The odds aren't terrible here. So people are saying, well, maybe we should sit on the sidelines until we know what's going to happen, because if that does happen, it could be bad for the markets, bad for your portfolio, bad for your wealth, bad for a whole host of reasons. So are they right?
Yeah. Look, I'm going to go on a limb here and look really stupid in a week's time. I think the chances are much, much less than one in three.
Okay.
Realistically, if we had three elections in a row, one in three chance means Trump wins at least one of those elections. Mm. The chances of that in this particular circumstance, I think, are way overstated.
Sake of the argument, though, let's say that's exactly what it is. Whatever it is, you know, 30% chance, 25, yep. 30. There's a very meaningful chance he's going to do it.
Yes.
Am I right to think, you know what, I'm just going to sell some of my shares right now. I'm going to delay doing what I otherwise might have done. Is that a sensible move? I mean, given the very, very serious, you know, economic and market ramifications.
No.
How do you square that circle for me, Mr. Phillips? How do you connect those two thoughts?
So here's the thing. The market goes through, we say, well, some people say, I hate the cliche, but in this case, it's slightly relevant, so I'll use it. They say the market climbs a wall of worry. Mm. That is that the market goes up over time, despite all the things that might possibly happen. In fact, despite some of the things that actually do happen. So remember, Greece was going to leave the euro, and Italy was going to go broke, and Portugal and Spain were going to go broke. Mm. And there was going to be a Brexit.
Still could happen, by the way.
Well, there's going to be a Brexit, and there's going to be a whole lot of other stuff. Now, Brexit happened. Brexit didn't.
Yep.
Italy, Spain, Portugal didn't go broke.
Yeah.
All those things we worried about that did and didn't happen, the market still goes up. Well, that's the challenge, right? So Brexit actually happened, and the market panicked the day after. Mm. A month later, the shares were higher than they were before Brexit even happened.
I think you've hit on it. For me, what I find difficult to accept from a lot of the punditry, they say, look, if Trump wins, the market's going to fall a lot the next day. You know what? I'm pretty sure they're 100% right. But is that a reason not to invest? So, example, let's look at Brexit. So, market down 3% the day after. It was huge. I mean, the whole market does not fall by that much very often. When it does, it's a pretty serious thing. Interestingly enough, less than a month later, the market was then up more than 5% from where it was before.
Exactly.
And I think we're still above that point now. So it's one of these things that I think, you know, we've talked about it before. If you're going to invest in the share market and you're really investing for 1 or 2 year periods, you're really flipping a coin. I don't really care what you buy. You buy the best business out there, you know, and just something happens and you could lose half your money very quickly. So first of all, if you're going to invest in the market, you're doing it for at least a 5 year time frame. So the trouble is that even once this sort of uncertainty resolves itself, there's the next 20 things that are going to come and confuse us and confound us and make us worry about the future. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would say is, even if we sort of play it through and we say, well, let's say he does win and there are these issues, it doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily have no investment opportunities. I would posit that something like Apple is probably still going to be around in 10 years' time. People are still going to be going nuts for phones. You know, they're still going to be earning a lot of money. Are they a business that today is really worth buying if Trump doesn't win? But if Trump does win, it's something that you want to stay a million miles away from. I can't. That, to me, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is the, you know, the market over a century and more has climbed inexorably, despite all the worst things that the world could throw at it. We've had two world wars, a whole lot of terrorism, oil shocks, hyperinflation, stagflation, low interest rates, GFCs, local recessions, international recessions, Asian financial crises. They're just ones I can think of off the top of my head, and I'm sure there's a dozen more if I sat down and tried to list it out, it'll come up with. Mm. You know, the market will always find reasons to fall because people panic or people don't panic, because things happen or don't happen. Mm. But the market rises overall despite these things. And that's the key one. So look, you know, is a Trump, the day after a President Trump election, is the market going to fall? Almost certainly, because people are fearful of what might happen. Mm. But is it likely to happen? No. And if it does happen, is it the end of the world? No. They're, you know, for better or worse, he's only got 8 years maximum as president. And presidents, frankly, have much, much less impact on the economy than we imagine.
We'll come back to that point.
We will.
Actually, one thing I would say, if I was in the wall building business, or if I could buy shares in a company that was known to build very big, tall, you know, walls, that's probably going to be great if Trump wins, right?
Hair pieces, tanning salons, orange right. paint, lots of good stuff.
All right, let's move on.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
So let's talk a bit about the energy revolution. It's been in the news a little bit.
Talking about a revolution.
Hazelwood.
Cue to the Beatles. Go on.
The biggest, dirtiest plant in Australia, brown coal-fired power plant.
The ugliest and dirtiest of the ugly and dirty.
It's really a horrible piece of infrastructure, but serves a very, very real need.
It does.
And that's what's also difficult about this. Interestingly enough, this one plant closure alone will reduce the country's emissions by 5%, which is just incredible. Mm. Now, at the same time, we've had Elon Musk of Tesla fame come out and say, you know, he's on a mission to save the world and send people to Mars and do a whole bunch of other things.
He is Iron Man after all.
He is Iron Man. And he's got this thing called the Powerwall. Mm. And they've just announced...
Not the Wonderwall.
Not the Wonderwall. Powerwall. And they've just announced these solar tiles. These tiles that you put on... Not a solar panel, but the tile itself is a solar
tile.
A roof tile.
Right.
And so we have seen this dramatic shift. And so he thought that's probably an interesting thing to talk about in terms of an investment perspective.
Yeah.
And I thought it was particularly interesting because I happen to know, Mr. Phillips, that you yourself have just purchased a Powerwall.
Mister, you must want something. I have indeed. So look, let's break this down. Let's go to Hazelwood first. I'll keep everyone in suspense about the Powerwall. The Hazelwood power plant, as you said, Andrew, 5% of the country's emissions go away with the closure of Hazelwood. Mm. And again, politics aside, the fact that this was a commercial decision by a company rather than some sort of government decision, no matter what your political stripes, is absolutely madness.
Yep.
The positive thing for our country, for people who live in the area, other than the workers specifically employed, is our air is going to be a whole lot cleaner as a result of this change. As you said, brown coal's the worst. It's the most polluting coal there is.
Yep.
This is an old piece of infrastructure. The fact it's closing down, look, and frankly, think about, you know, the impact. Both federal state governments say that power prices will rise as a result because this also was very, very cheap power.
Yep.
If you, and, you know, the old style, the way they used to do this was you find a massive coal deposit and you simply build a power station next door.
Yep.
So it's incredibly cheap to get out of the ground. Yep. It's incredibly cheap to transport. It's incredibly cheap to burn.
Yep.
Hang the environment. But that's the problem. So the fact it's closing is great news for the economy, for the environment, I should say. Great news for Australia. Terrible news for those people obviously being put out of work, although we do believe that there's a decent government package being offered to them, which
apparently.
Is great.
Yeah,
and you know, overall, you know, a much, much better outcome for everybody else. Interestingly enough, this is another move towards, and we'll get to Powerwall in a second, because this is another move away from the highly polluting fossil fuel generated energy that we have currently. And again, I have a view on the environment, I have a view on what energy policy should be.
Hippie.
Outside what I actually think, this is the way that the world is moving. The country is moving this way. The economy, the political sphere is moving down that track. We're seeing massive amounts of money being put into wind, into solar, into other things, and money coming out of. In fact, Engie, the French company who owns Hazelwood, shut it down specifically because they want to get out of the coal business. That's what they're trying to do. They don't want to spend money promoting this stuff. They want to move towards themselves as a commercial decision towards producing renewable energy. And when companies themselves say, we don't want to do that anymore, hopefully governments catch up, but this is a really clear sense of where energy policy is moving.
Yep.
It's a big deal for people employed in the coal industry. It's a big deal for investors in coal companies, for what it's worth. And frankly, it's also a big deal for the environment. So, you know, it's a change worth being aware of, specifically because it was a commercial decision. When a government says you can't do it anymore, okay, fine, that's a political decision.
Yeah.
When a commercial business whose job is to make profit says, no, thank you, we don't want to burn brown coal anymore, that tells you everything you need to know about which way energy policy is heading.
Yeah, I think that's the key point that I really want to dig into here, because it tends to be, when you talk about these things, it really comes back to things, you know, like the environment and these broader, more qualitative type considerations. But
only qualitative if you can breathe.
Very,
very quickly if you can't breathe the air.
Well, very true.
Ask people in China. One of our colleagues came back. Two of our colleagues came back from Beijing in China with hacking coughs.
And
basically a decision not to buy anything from made in China right now. The pollution is so bad in China. And frankly, in terms of policy, China is moving that way as well for their own people's benefit, for the populace's benefit when it comes to pollution.
So when Elon was up in stage,
Mr. Musk,
and he's doing this. The interesting thing was he made a bit of a talk. He mentioned carbon emissions and you know parts per million and all sort of he started there, but really the thrust of his argument was people are going to buy this product purely because it just is in their financial interest to do so. It's cheaper and it's better. And I think that's what's interesting. So this is why I wanted to come back. So you've decided to buy a Powerwall.
I have.
And presumably, given you're a bit of a numbers man,
yes.
And I know you like your finance and the rest of it, probably why you're on the podcast.
We're here, exactly.
I'm not
just here for my good looks, Andrew.
So break it down for me. So was that very much a consideration for you? Is it the financials of it just added up?
Yeah. No, it doesn't add up at all. At least not yet.
Doesn't it? Okay.
So I bought the Powerwall 2 is the other big announcement. I know. The other big announcement this week is the Powerwall 2 has been announced, right?
just after you've bought your Powerwall 1.
Seriously. Honestly. I'm sure they waited. Elon's like, has he had it installed yet? Yep. Okay, great. Let's come up with the Powerwall 2. It's going to halve the cost, apparently, of the cost per kilowatt hour of energy.
Amazing.
So in terms of, again, I'm absolutely royally screwed on buying the Powerwall number 1. So my wife and I, we had basically a conversation. So, what do we want to do in terms of power, in terms of ongoing cost of our power?
Yep.
And frankly, you're right. I'm a bit of a hippie in terms of the environment. I don't want, I've got a 3.5-year-old kid. We don't want to be adding to the world's environmental degradation. And so, yes, that makes me a hippie. I'm fortunate I'm in a situation where I can afford to put my hand in my pocket and spend a couple of grand. So over 10 years or so, I'm going to be a couple of grand out of pocket. This actually is going to cost me a couple of thousand bucks to have a power wall and some panels on the roof. So I did the combination. If I hadn't done anything and just used the power out of the wall socket, not worried about it, I would be better off financially in 10 years' time than I am today.
Right.
But we made a decision to say, look, we can afford to put our hands in our pockets. It's all money. And so some people can't afford to or don't want to do it. We made a decision that we wanted to basically not spend money on something else, spend it on a power wall and a set of solar panels on the roof because it was pretty lime ball and... frankly, we want to do the right thing by the environment. We want to do the right thing by our kids and their kids and their kids.
Okay.
If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And we just made that decision. So people will make different decisions. You can do something different. Our listeners will make their own choices. But quite frankly, if the Powerwall 2 had been available, particularly on a per kilowatt hour basis, I dare say you'd almost break even buying a Powerwall 2. And to your point about the roof tiles, the roof tiles are actually cheaper to install than the equivalent roof, than normal roof tiles plus solar panels and the energy you're going to save. So it makes more sense now to build a roof with Tesla's roof tiles than to not do it at all.
Okay, but put this bottom line for me. What's the investment takeaway for something like this?
All right.
You surprised me a bit with your answer there. I thought you were going to say, well, it makes sense because I'm going to be X. And I'm like, okay, you're just doing it to feel good.
Well,
congrats, I was expecting a different answer.
Not just to feel good, to actually improve our carbon footprint, our impact on the environment, right?
Great.
So that has dividends for my kids, for your kids, for their kids.
Right.
You can screw my kids. I'm not going to. I'm going to do the right thing. But,
I got a brown fire coal pipe.
Yeah, I bet you do. At the backyard, back. Yeah, mate. Thanks very much. You would too.
It's cheaper.
Mercenary bastard. look, so the bottom line here is there is an absolute revolution underway. Mm-hmm. You make the point about the tiles now are cheaper than the equivalent roof tiles. We've got companies closing down coal-fired power stations purely on commercial reasons.
Yep.
And you've frankly got people like me and other people who will pay a couple of bucks out of their own pockets to be first movers, to be leading edge in terms of the change in the energy revolution, as you call it, Andrew, when you started talking about it. This is the real game changer that's going on right now. In a couple of years' time, we are going to find unsubsidized renewable power is cheaper than the other stuff. Yep. Now, if you're an owner in shares in companies that mine coal, that burn coal, this is old economy stuff. Now, I'm not predicting doom and gloom, but you've got to be really clear here.
It's a pretty serious headwind to be sailing into, though, right?
This is an inflection point, quite literally. This is the point at which technology is overtaking what used to happen. You can extrapolate some things. If you're farming wheat, you can probably farm wheat 100 years hence, climate change impact notwithstanding. You can pretty much assume that's going to happen, right? If you extrapolate, though, old energy, coal in particular, into the future and say, this is in 10, 20, 30 years' time, the market will look nothing like it has for the past literally 100 years.
Yeah.
These power plants have been doing their thing basically unchanged for 100 years.
Yeah.
But the next 20 years is going to be very, very, very different. If you're an investor in old school power, particularly coal mines and coal-fired power stations, if you're an energy company, if you own shares in Origin and AGL, be very, very careful about what you expect the future to look like. Because hippiness aside, there is a change because simply financially, economically, companies are making their own decisions. AGL is getting their solar panels. This French company is closing down coal-fired power stations. And the renewable energy is becoming cheaper per kilowatt hour than the energy it's replacing. That is a marked shift in the way the economy is moving. And you need to be prepared for that as an investor, or you're going to get caught holding the baby.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy who's buying shares in a buggy whip maker, you know, as cars are coming into fashion.
That's a great example, right? This is quite seriously, this is a similar-ish change in the energy infrastructure of the country.
All right.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
We've touched on politics earlier on, but let's come back to that because we wanted to...
Stay with us, listeners. It's not going to be that bad.
well, we wanted to do a little bit of myth-busting, for want of a better word. Yes. You know, we're going to trade wisdom for foolishness. There's a lot of accepted wisdom out there in the market, and people say these things, and, you know, you say something often enough, it does become accepted as truth.
Like the Trump dump, for example.
Like the Trump dump.
There we go.
There's the number three mention already.
You're welcome.
So we thought, well, let's try and make this a sort of semi-regular feature, and why not start off with this one? And again, let's just be purely agnostic from a political standpoint here. Yep. You will hear a lot of people say, a lot of smart, well-respected people say that really, as far as the economy and the share market and all that is concerned, you want the Conservatives to be in power. Mm-hmm. Libs are better for the ASX. The Republicans are better for Wall Street. And it seems to make a lot of sense. They are more pro-business, you know, it's a narrative that makes sense.
Yep.
Unfortunately, though, the data doesn't support that.
Correct. If you look at the last five U.S. presidents, let's just use U.S. numbers because we've got a U.S. election coming up right now.
Okay.
So Ronald Reagan's presidency, 8 years of Reagan.
Yep.
Average, say S&P 500, the U.S. stock market, just as a proxy, right? The Reagan presidency delivered a gain of 10% a year. That's pretty good. It's about average, right?
Yep.
The Bush presidency, another Republican president.
Yep.
Bush the first, 5.3%.
Okay.
Okay, so less than average, but fair enough. Clinton, 15%. George Bush the second, -5%, and Obama 13%.
Yeah.
That's the last.
Oh, he was lucky that he sort of started around the GFC, so he got a very low base there, didn't he?
Yeah, true. But you know, the gains for Bush's 8 years, for example, including the run up before the GFC, and he still delivered -5.6%. So, you know, yes, there are absolutely components of that, and there's timing. That's only five presidents. Mm. Even if you go back to 1900, the average annual difference between parties is less than 1% per year.
Yeah.
In other words, it's basically
nothing.
There's nothing. It is line ball. There is that sort of era, that sort of difference. There's only been 15 presidents since 1900.
Such a small sample set.
Right. Yeah. So even if there was a bigger gap, you'd still say, well, the sample size doesn't work.
Yeah.
When there is that sort of number and the numbers are basically flat, the last five presidencies you know, show that. We're not saying, by the way, that, you know, one party is necessarily better than the other. The point is that there is no distinct difference between the parties when it comes to the performance of the economy. They're simply, you know, the accepted wisdom and, frankly, the political wisdom that the Conservative Party, Australia's Liberal Party, the Republicans in the US, the Tories in the UK, they're somehow pro-business and therefore the returns are better. Mm. They are definitely pro-business. That's true. It just doesn't get reflected in the results. And in fact, if you look at the Reagan years, growth in profit during the Reagan years is about 27%. Mm. Under the Obama, and Reagan was kind of like the arch, you know, kind of example of conservative neoliberal politics. Mm-hmm. Under the Republican president, under the Obama presidency, I should say, gain about 55%. Mm. So, you know, this isn't saying that Democrats are better for business. They're not. But overall, the thought that somehow you can draw party lines, a party philosophy, party ideology, and extrapolate that to the markets and the economy just simply doesn't hold water.
Yeah, and my view tends to be, it's such a, for want of a better word, a multifactorial type thing. You know, you have umpteen dozen factors sort of all pushing on the main economic drivers. And politics is part of that mix, but it's a relatively small part. There are much more fundamental laws of economics that are at play here. So even if you have something that might tip things one way or the other, it is, you know, pissing into the wind from, you know, pardon the French there.
I'll stand outside this.
Right. You know what I mean, though?
And yeah, totally.
And I think when people sort of look at these things, they extrapolate too much and draw too much meaning from it. So again, whatever your stripe is, whether you're an ardent communist or you're a hardcore capitalist right-winger, you know, these things really shouldn't influence your decision. I mean, you're far better off just trying to understand the bloody business and working out what a fair price to pay is.
Governments are far less responsible for the good stuff and, frankly, also far less responsible for the bad stuff that happens in our economy.
Myth busted.
Busted.
Well, that almost wraps it up. Before we go, don't forget you can subscribe to Triple M's Motley Fool Money through the iTunes or your iTunes store. The iTunes. It sounds like my grandma.
The Netflix or the Google.
Through iTunes, as the kids say, or your favorite Android podcast app. And of course, at triplem.com.au/podcast. And please, if you'd be so kind, give us a 5-star rating. So, Scott, thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, fools.
Until next week, fools, fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.